This is Stateside. I'm Zoe Clark. So the good news, the patient is out of critical condition, but we can't forget about that long period of recovery. That might be how Detroit News columnist Daniel Howes is thinking about Michigan's economy these days. Hey, Daniel.
Hey, how are you?
Good. So, you know, the governor, he delivered his State of the State address Tuesday evening, highlighting progress that the state has made, you know, comeback since the Great Recession. But as you note in your column today, Michigan still has a long way to go.
Yeah, it certainly does. I mean, I don't like the word comeback, frankly. I think in terms of both the state of Michigan and the city of Detroit, it's more of a climb out, as in climb out of a hole, a very deep hole, and really a chart a way forward. There's a real tendency in this state, I think, to get complacent in good times and also to look backwards and want to, you know, Detroit is coming back.
Yeah.
Michigan is coming back. Well, let me tell you. It's very different.
Well, I love in the column you write, forget nostalgia-fueled comebacks.
Yeah, exactly. You know, this is really about moving forward. I mean, you take the auto industry in the context of Michigan. You know, the concentration of auto production in Michigan is higher than it's been in a very long time. That's the good news and the bad news. I mean, the bad news is the reason it's concentrated here is they pulled out of a lot of other states. So you benefit from it on the upside. But it's also a lot smaller in terms of footprint and people that work for those companies.
Mm-hmm.
They're producing a lot of vehicles in the state of Michigan and around the country, but they're doing it with a very small number of people, comparatively speaking, to the past. So as a result, the bounce, if you will, of an automotive rebound is not as high as it has been in the past, and it's not going to benefit people as much as it has in the past. And I think the governor's message is the right one, and that is we got to keep moving forward here, and we got to consolidate the gains and not backslide.
So, I mean, what is going to get in the way of that? We've got the governor saying, you know, move forward. That's what you're talking about. What are sort of the stumbling blocks to that?
Well, I think garden variety politics, in his case, from the right and the left,
yeah.
His own party and his own legislature is going to, I think, prove problematic going forward. Roads is the most obvious issue. I mean, I don't think anybody is crazy about what came out of the lame duck session. And frankly, I think a lot of people expect that it's not going to pass. I mean, when you start to look around the region in the Midwest, you find that there are states like Ohio that whether they've got a Republican, John Kasich running the shop, or they got a Democrat, Ted Strickland, running the place, they seem to be able to coalesce around some long-term strategic priorities, one of which is road funding. And we tend to be very polarized and bouncing from Republican to Democrat. And, you know, when the next administration comes in, throw everything out that the previous people did and then move forward. And another good example of that is this whole tax credit problem that the governor is now contending with and that gives them a deficit going into the next budget.
We're looking right at this projected $350 million budget. We'll know a little bit more when the governor delivers his proposed budget the second week of February. Although I think it does seem like listening to the governor's speech Tuesday night that he does feel a little liberated, you know, in the fact that he's not running for re-election. I mean, you almost wanted a conservative response to his State of the State address rather than, you know, the usual Democratic response.
You know, I got to tell you, I wonder going forward if you're not going to see a more moderation from this governor because he's not running for re-election. And as a result, there's going to be more battling on his right than there's going to be on his left. And it may be that he is building coalitions with more middle-of-the-road Republicans and Democrats to get some of this stuff accomplished. And another thing that he mentioned was working on Elliot Larson revisions, which I think he was very cagey about before the election and certainly before the convention in August.
And knowing, too, that we've got this new, even larger conservative majority in the state legislature. I was there in the Capitol watching the speech. He brought up Elliot Larson. Democrats stood, and there were a number of conservative Republicans sitting on their hands when he delivered that part of the speech.
Oh, absolutely. So I think, I mean, you have to remember something about where this guy comes from. I mean, he's an Ann Arbor guy. I think he understands. He's been an employer. He has worked in private equity and venture capital. He understands those kinds of things. That's a different milieu than a lot of mm-hmm. conservative lawmakers from small town mid-Michigan. And he's got a different approach. And I think you're going to see that as we go forward. But the overarching message here is we're in a pretty good position And I don't think we want to be fumbling the ball.
And you write a bit in your column today that, too, a lot of this is about the perception of a comeback, this idea that there needs to be this sense of positivity among, you know, maybe the governor, of course, we can't, you know, get away without saying relentless positive action, but also automakers, Southeast Michigan feeling better about the economy, the west side of the state, you know, Grand Rapids doing well.
Well, and the other thing you learn, I think, in business is that results drive perception. And the truth of the matter is in the last 5 years, the two things that have defined Michigan more than anything else, the city of Detroit's situation and the big three automakers have really gone through fundamental transformations, the likes of which has really never happened in anyone's lifetime. They were very unique. They used bankruptcy to restructure debt. In the case of autos, to lower their costs dramatically, labor costs, all sorts of other costs. And as a result, they're making more money in the United States than they made probably since the 1960s. It's huge. And Detroit also, I mean, they've either restructured or eliminated $10 billion of $18 billion of total liabilities. That's huge for them. So they've got breathing room, and I think there's a lot of excitement about what's going on in the city of Detroit. There's excitement about the Detroit automakers, and as a result, I think that can drive a narrative that is a positive narrative that's actually backed up with results, not just cyclical hype.
But again, as we've mentioned earlier, and as you write in today's column, we have to be careful not to incubate the disease of complacency, something that has plagued the state in the past.
Right, and I think you're going to 2015 is very critical. You've got a very big labor negotiation coming up with United Auto Workers, GM, Ford, and Chrysler, and how that plays out is going to really fuel that narrative, either positively or negatively. So it's going to be done at a time of great prosperity for these companies.
Well, and doesn't this go to also what we heard from the president when he delivered his State of the Union, that there is this focus on sort of middle-class jobs, on skilled workers, and, you know, that a lot of these larger companies, of course, auto industry being part of that, feeling the economic upturn, feeling better about things, but there's plenty in the middle class who are saying, hey, we're not seeing the recovery yet.
That's right. And unless you're in the stock market, which more people are, but unless you're in the stock market, you're not getting those run-ups. I mean, the fact of the matter is that interest rates have been at rock-bottom lows, and one of the reasons the stock market is doing so well is because corporate profits are doing well, and that's about the only place you can make any money, because you certainly can't make it put it in a savings account. And you're right. A lot of this is not redounding to the so-called middle class, and that's why I think we're going to be looking at these negotiations, among other things, as a bellwether. It's going to be very hard for companies to plead poverty when they've made over the last couple, three, 4 years, you know, tens of billions of dollars in profits in the United States.
That is what the middle class is seeing.
Well, they are. But that said, we've also been a poster child for being uncompetitive and not approaching business the way the rest of the world does. We kind of have marched to our own economic drum, and the fact of the matter is there is no Detroit economic model. It was made up here at a time that was not competitive. I mean, when the car companies controlled 90% of the U.S. market and you had a labor monopoly, you could do that. Well, you don't do that anymore. It's just a totally different world, and that is not going to change.
Daniel Howes, columnist at the Detroit News, joins us Thursdays. Daniel, thanks so much.
Thank you.